This is the first time I've had my parents come to a premiere, and you know, it's been a lot. It's been a lot for me, for them, and for a lot of people, Black Cowboys across the country.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
Hey, welcome back to Story and Craft. I'm Mark Preston. If this is your first time, welcome. Thank you very much for just checking it out, being a part of the show here today. You're really going to like this conversation. LaMonica Garrett. You know, I've been keeping an eye on him for a while, really enjoy his work. I think what he did in the Paramount Plus show, 1883, he played Thomas. He just knocked it out of the park. He is truly a talented actor. The dynamic with him alongside Sam Elliott, TV magic right there. He's been in a lot of other stuff. I mean, he's been in Sons of Anarchy, Designated Survivor, The Last Ship. And my son even reminded me he was in the DC Universe as the Monitor and Anti-Monitor. Now, on the big screen, Transformers Dark of the Moon, he's done that. The Netflix movie XOXO, Daddy's Home, and more. And coming up July 1st, he's going to be in the Amazon Prime show, The Terminal List. He's co-starring with Chris Pratt, and this is going to be a great show. Now, don't forget Story and Craft Pod. It's where everything is. You want to send me a message, sign up for the newsletter, follow me on social media, pretty much anything you ever could possibly want to know about this show and listen to the show itself is at storyandcraftpod.com. And again, thank you so much for checking out the show. Do me a favor and subscribe if you would. Leave a review, give 5 stars, 10 stars, whatever the maximum amount of stars you can give. If you love the show, please do so. Definitely appreciate you being a part of it. Okay, let's get after it. It's LaMonica Garrett Day right here on Story and Craft. So how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm pretty good. The weather's kind of nice. The heat kind of subsided a little bit. We got a little rain.
Now where are you located? Are you on the you're in LA?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now I see you're a West Coast guy from the get-go. You're from San Francisco, right?
Oh yeah, Cali kid.
You know, it's so funny. I was you know, my son and I always watch Designated Survivor. And I know Reed Diamond. I was like, oh, I'm gonna make a note, let you know. It's like, oh, what's it like working with Reed? Literally that same moment, yeah. I get an email from him. I'm like, dude, the universe, man, it's ponderous. And I will read you his email. He says, LaMonica is one of my most favorite people on the planet. Please give him my love. So I'm giving you his love.
That's awesome. Yeah, Reed, that was my partner. We had such a good time out in Toronto working. He's awesome.
Is that where y'all shot Designated Survivor in Toronto?
Yeah.
We'll definitely get to 1883, without a doubt. That's another show. My son and I, he was jazzed that I was talking to you today because we watched Designated Survivor, both incarnations, you know, when it was, I think, on ABC, then on Netflix, and 1883, yeah. Which is just on point. What a great show. But what have you been up to since then, since that's wrapped up?
Since I got back, I worked on a short film. It'll hit the film circuit like the Sundances and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how that goes. And just doing PR for Terminal List. You know, I told my reps that I want to chill out for a little bit. I want to take some time off. Right from Terminal List, we shot that. A few days later, I'm in Texas, and I was there for 6 months straight. Didn't really get home.
Oh, so y'all shot that before 1883.
Yeah, we shot that beforehand, and it was when I found out I got 1883, it was like 3 days, hey, they need you in Texas. So I didn't have time to do anything.
When is Terminal List set to come out?
July 1st.
July 1st, okay, yeah. So that's you, Chris Pratt. It's a military-based show. And if I read the premise correct, it's basically him reminiscing or thinking back to and some events or event that happened when he was in the military. And is that kind of where you fall into the cast there? You were part of his unit or whatever?
Yeah, I was part of the unit at home. I'm pretty much his commanding officer, his, you know, like a mentor to him. And he went out on a mission and his team got ambushed. So he's trying to put the pieces together. And that's where we pick up from in episode one.
Well, that's very cool. Yeah, definitely going to chat about that in a moment. But 1883, man, what a really well-executed show. I mean, I have so many questions. The first one is, I was literally just having lunch with my son. I was like, you know what? I'm going to tell you,
you need to make a, there needs to be a prequel to the prequel of the genesis of the relationship with you and Sam Elliott. I need to know more about that. It was almost like there's this whole unspoken relationship between the two of y'all. And or there's a lot of stuff that, you know, didn't come up. Did Taylor Sheridan, did he sit down and say, okay, here's the backstory between the two of y'all, though it may not come up on screen, or did y'all just sit down and kind of hash out what your relationship was going to be about?
Taylor came up to us individually, and he told me pretty much what Thomas was and, you know, where he came from and what his story was. He told me a lot of that during the casting process, during my last audition to get the job. And when I got to Texas, he filled me in a little bit more. And me and Sam, as soon as we met, we hit it off. But me and Sam never really had a sit down about Thomas and Shay and where they came from. Taylor's writing is real in depth and real, it's all on the page. So if we stick the landing on our side, you know, it would sing. And
yeah, one of the things I loved about the show was that it wasn't trying to say, oh, the Old West was so hard and trying to, or didn't overly romanticize it. It was right down the middle. It was just kind of as close to, this is what it was, you know. And I thought it was just, again, really well executed. And I heard an interview with Sam Elliott talking about how, in terms of wardrobe, how important the hat is. And he said that he was going to wear a hat that he was going to, it's got to fit. It's an extension of you or something. But apparently the hat they got him didn't fit quite right. So he was locked in having to wear it every thing. How did your hat fit? Were you happy with it?
I mean, my hat was more of it was part of his soldier hat. It was part of his Buffalo Soldier, the jacket. So I was good with it. But cowboys in general, I learned that when I was down in Texas. The hat is very important, and it starts with the hat, and then you start dressing down from that. And I had no idea of hat etiquette, but I know now.
Well, a couple questions. They're both based on your appearance. Was that your choice? Did you say, okay, this is how I feel I would have looked back then, or was this, again, you know, more of a production decision?
It was more of a, we're on the trail. Like, we're, you know, you're on this Oregon trail. It started off with kind of thin cut, you know, mustache was a little lower. It was more groomed in the beginning. And as you go, you don't have barbers with you that you travel with. You know, like, it's not like we're going to go to, a salon somewhere and get taken care of. So it's just gradually over that time period on the Oregon trail, your hair just grows. And I think that was part of the authenticity of it.
Yeah, again, there was a lot, in my mind, it was one of the more honest or more authentic depictions of what I imagine the Old West was like. Having grown up in Texas, you know, it's just sort of like, it's just in the ethos. You know, where did y'all shoot, by the way, in Texas?
We shot in a handful of places in Texas. We shot in Fort Worth. We shot in Weatherford. We shot in Mineral Wells, Dixon, Guthrie. Yeah, we traveled. Yeah,
y'all are really keeping it true to the story then. A good friend of mine back in Dallas named Chris, he first got me turned on to Yellowstone. I really didn't have a chance to get into Yellowstone yet, but I started with 1883, really. He was watching roughly the same time. I said, man, they're tracking right west of Fort Worth, heading towards the Red River. You know, y'all were pretty much shooting ballpark where it was technically set. And it almost never happens, it seems like, you know.
Yeah, we were going from ranch to ranch, and we ended up in Montana. We shot in two different locations in Montana. We ultimately ended up in Oregon. So, yeah, the train was on the rise, and we kept going.
You kept your uniform the entire time. Was there a story behind that or a decision that – I'm just kind of curious because you're the only one that didn't change wardrobe throughout the whole series.
I think for me and Taylor talked about it, it was a sense of pride that was really the first thing that Thomas had that was his. And he had a sense of pride about being a Buffalo Soldier, coming from where he came from, and especially in that point in history for a black cowboy. So he just, that's his badge. Yeah, that was just his, he had so much honor and pride in wearing that jacket, that Buffalo Soldier, you know, being a part of that unit, that's pretty much who he is.
What was the backstory did you come up with? Like, where did Taylor Sheridan say, this is where he's from?
He was from Mississippi. He was born on a plantation down in Mississippi, and when he was around 11, 12 years old, he walked into the plantation house, and the slave owner was passed away from natural causes. So Thomas just gets on a horse and he rides off and he figures out life, and he ultimately ends up, you know, in the Union, fighting alongside Buffalo soldiers, and that's where he met Shay. And that's where their story picked up.
The kind of the way it's portrayed, or the way, you know, you're his right-hand man or whatever, but for me, it was just a straight-up friendship. You know, there wasn't any right or left.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you were, there were, I think the show is worth watching just for you and Sam Elliott, just the interactions and just the, you know, you are the wisdom that sometime for him, and it seems like a guy like Sam Elliott's the guy technically offering the wisdom, but just a little bit more on 1883 is this, Tim McGraw, I haven't seen him act for years, you know, all the way back to Friday Night Lights and whatever have you. It was so good to see him in a lead, you know, and he, of course, acting with your wife, I mean, have you ever seen maybe look like they're in an argument or like, okay, is that real deal? Or are they just really method getting ready for a scene, you know? Did he kind of encourage you to, were you a country music fan to begin with? Or, you know, I'd seen on Instagram, you'd kind of showed up to a concert or two of his.
Yeah, I've listened to some country music. I haven't really gotten depth with it until I was in, you know, on this cast and down in Texas, and you're just surrounded by it. But if you're going to be introduced to country music on a wide scale, Tim McGraw and Faith are the ones you want to usher you into that. And it was amazing.
Yeah, he's kind of sitting on the Mount Rushmore of kind of those guys in country, you know. He can get away with wearing a leather vest and no shirt on stage. I'm like, you know what? He's making all of us guys of a certain age look bad. I mean, you know, like, I'm like, but I know, you know, physical fitness is like a real big thing for you. So they have a little like mobile gym set up for you on the set while y'all were shooting?
Yeah, Taylor had something set up. He had a gym at the ranch we were staying at first, and they put together a mobile gym for us when we started going on the road. And when we got around November, late October, early November, I think it was, Tim had his personalized trailer gym meet us where we were at. And his gym, like this huge, you know, it's like you're in a real gym somewhere with walls and, you know, 270-inch screen TVs, a sauna, cold plunge, all the weights you can imagine. So every morning beforehand, me and Tim would be in there, and sometimes Taylor, when he was in town, we'd all be in there getting after it like at 4 in the morning before we start work at like 5:30.
You know, it's funny. I talked to Billy Bob Thornton just a few weeks, I don't know, God, I lose track of time, a few weeks back. And I was curious when he shows up on set, you know, here's a guy who was in Tombstone, the Alamo, or like, you know, he's a guy who's kind of like a Western royalty technically now, you know, because he's been in Tombstone. When Billy Bob Thornton shows up on set, what was that day like?
It was real. It was nice. He's real gracious with his time. He was taking pictures, you know. All of us, we're fans before we are actors. And I've been a fan of Billy Bob forever. And we had like 400 background players when we were in Fort Worth. And a lot of them were coming up to Billy, you know, and he was talking to everybody. He was real, just personable. And just, we were working late. We're working all night, a couple nights. No one's complaining. Everyone's just happy to be there, knowing the magnitude of the project. You know, you're just looking around at the people involved in this. We all knew it was going to be something special. So it was, you know.
I didn't know what to think of it. I just knew it was a prequel. Honestly, when I found out Sam Elliott's in it, he's one of those guys that drink his Kool-Aid. Whatever he's in, I'm going to check him out. All the way back to Big Lebowski and before. You know, he just always brings something to the show. And I didn't know much about Isabel May beforehand. But, man, what a little force of nature, man. It was the fact that she was kind of carrying the narrative in a way. I can't imagine the show being the same if any one of the characters wasn't there. And yours was just like, you know. You're always level and even. It's very rare I watch a show and go, damn, that was damn good. I wish there was some more of that, but it's obviously, it's kind of self-contained. You really can't have a sequel to that, I guess.
Leave on a high note, I guess.
Curious about origin story on you. I know you're from San Francisco, but was acting always on the radar for you? Or was this something that just kind of, you kind of evolved into?
I played football. That was my first passion. And I always knew that I wanted to do something in entertainment. I couldn't sing. I rapped a little bit, but, you know, I didn't know where that was going to go. I was a dancer, break dancing back in, you know, San Francisco in the 80s.
Oh, so you were one of those guys walking around with a big old thing of cardboard if you fold up?
Cardboard everywhere. We were looking for the local wrecks. We were looking for battles. We were, you know, we had a crew. Cardboard was your, like, that was your staple. when you're back spinning and you're windmilling.
Yeah, I don't think my kids would understand a tape deck, boom box, and cardboard was a source of, like, it was, man, a thing back in the day.
Those were the glory days. Yeah.
So were you growing up as an only child, or did you have any brothers or sisters coming up?
I was a middle child. I had an older brother, younger sister, so I had a lot of me time. You know, I was a latchkey kid. You know, it was like come and go. It was a different time back then.
Kind of hard to explain to kids what, I mean, stuff we got away with. I can't imagine. I got a 19, a 17, and a 16-year-old. And I cannot imagine. I didn't get myself into trouble, but man, I'd be like, okay, lights come on. All right, it's time to go home.
It's time to go home. Yeah, you could be gone all day, but you know, when those lights come on, you know, lights come on, it's time to get back to the house. And that was the unwritten rule, or it was the rule, but we all knew that rule.
As long as I was cool making my own dinner, I could stay out even later. I'm like, yeah, that's easy, you know. I could whip together a sandwich.
Yeah.
So you started off, you're in San Francisco, you're breakdancing, but you're an athlete through high school also, correct?
Yeah, and you know, it was like, my dream was to get in the NFL. I got pretty close, but I didn't make it. And it was one of those things where it was like that fork in the road. All right, what do you do now? Because I gave football my everything.
Where were you playing?
And in the back of my head, in Central State in Ohio, small school in Wilberforce, Ohio, about right outside Columbus. And right when that was over, when I realized it wasn't going to happen for me, it was like, all right, well, move to LA and try to figure that out. Like that. And with acting, there's no structure. There's no, you know, go to school this many years and then you got to do an internship here, and there's no rhyme or reason. You just go out there and try to make it happen. And that's what I did.
Yeah, so you went from one job or one potential vocation or aspiration that has the odds are just stacked against anybody who wants to do it, just the numbers alone. Then you got into another gig that the odds are stacked against you. But you clearly thrived.
I'm a glutton for punishment, yeah.
So what kind of gig were your folks involved in?
They were both in the medical field. My mom was a nurse. She was a at-home nurse, and she worked in the hospital a little bit. My dad did. He was a medic in Vietnam, and he came back, and he picked up that where he left off when he got back. So my mom had two jobs. My dad had a job, but it took a lot of his time. So, you know, you see him when you see him.
Yeah, so you were really carving out your own space back in the day.
Yeah.
I guess kind of we all were, those latchkey kids, that whole thing. So there was no, like, there were no thespians in your family going, acting, it's a thing, you know? So
no.
How did they feel when you said, you know, this acting thing, I've been doing the football thing, now I want to do this thing? What was the reaction that you got?
I had the most support from my family. They left Mississippi. The way they grew up in the 60s out in, you know, that civil rights kind of that era, they wanted us to have a different shot at life. So they sacrificed, they left everything they knew and moved to San Francisco. We didn't have any really friends or family when, you know, we made some, but summers we would drive back to Mississippi so I would spend time with my family.
Whereabouts in Mississippi are your folks from?
In Canton, Jackson, and Lexington.
Big difference between Canton, Mississippi and San Francisco. It is a vast cultural, sociological, everywhere, every other way of looking at it. You can still get good food, though, so that's kind of a nice thing about Mississippi. But but you still have your roots, some extended family down there, right?
Yeah, everybody's still down there. They're in Chicago. And my family, whatever I decided to do, they wanted me to be better than what they were. And that's every parent's goal, is for the next generation to have more opportunities and just have a better life. And they did that. So it was like, I owe it to them. That's why whenever I talk about my parents, my mom, when I'm doing these interviews, I get choked up a little bit because I know how much they sacrificed for me to just live a dream. And that's all I'm doing right now, is living a dream, you know, taking chances.
Well, playing, being in 1883 and playing who you were playing, I mean, that had to really resonate at some level. I mean, that had to be a special thing for you to get cast in. You know, when you're going through the audition process, I mean, that had to have been bouncing around your brain, you know, what this would mean if you got this and who you'd be playing and what that would inject into the overall story of the West and the Oregon Trail and stuff. I mean, what were your folks saying to you about that when you landed the role, you know, a Buffalo Soldier? What was kind of their feedback?
They knew the significance of it, and I put a lot of weight on myself because I know the genre and I know the lack of representation that's been there over the years. And my mom's a huge Western fan. She's an aficionado of all things Western, if you ask her. So she knows that there weren't a lot of black cowboys growing up, especially on the television side. So when I told her I got this role, she was just so excited. And I really don't tell them much until it's about to air, whether it's a film or whether it's on TV. But my mom, I walked her through the whole process of everything that was going on. Like, and she just, I had, this is the first time I've had my parents come to a premiere that I was doing. And it just, it meant a lot. It meant a lot for me, for them, and for a lot of people, black cowboys across the country, present day black cowboys.
That's the reason why when I saw you wear the uniform the entire time, I gleaned that it was a sense of pride that kept the uniform on the entire time. And pride in what? Because you'd seen some, a character had seen some things,
That's the first thing he had that was his and that he earned and that he could be proud of. Everything else in his life is, who knows what he did from the age 12 on before he got there. And even being a slave, living on a plantation, nothing is yours. You don't have the sense of pride you have when someone gives you a gun, someone gives you a horse, even though it's an old beat down horse and it's probably a secondhand gun, and someone gives you a uniform and you have a territory to protect. They're entrusting you to do a job, and he's never had that before. And that's just, it's significant.
Yeah, and like I said, the relationship with you and Sam Elliott, again, his character, looking, sounding, the presence, everything about Sam Elliott, but yet you come and provide him some wisdom. One of my favorite scenes in the whole thing is you just walk up. There is this, if I could hang a phrase, it'd just be pure common, unadulterated common sense. You walk up to him, he's sitting there, he's got his gun, he's like, "All right, do I need to dig a hole?" Because you're like thinking, "Okay, what time is it? I got to get some stuff done. Do I need to dig a hole also?" I was like, this is some real deal stuff here. This is some, this is not, again, trying to say the West is a really hard place. It was just like, it was what it was.
It was matter of factly. And it set the tone for who they are and who they are as people together. And that's that opening scene when we read it. Sam said the same thing, was like, wow, like that's impactful. Like, who these guys are right out the gate.
I could just spend the whole time talking 1883, and there's some people maybe listening who haven't seen it yet. They need to. But your body of work, man. I was just talking to my son in the car when we go picked up lunch, and I saw you'd done the superhero thing. I didn't know about that. My son's like, yeah, he was in. He played. I forgot the character. He said you played, but it was. I see
the monitor.
Monitor.
The
yeah.
Monitor and the anti-monitor.
Yeah, so that's got to be kind of wild, because I mean, to say from that to 1883, that's some range right there, man.
I jump around a little bit.
Now, where did they shoot The Last Ship? I enjoyed that show. The premise and concept of it was pretty cool. Where was that made?
That was Culver Studios, and we went down to San Diego. We actually filmed on it at the Naval Base on one of the carriers a couple times, and that was amazing. And then before Terminalist, that was the last job I had in Los Angeles. Like, everything since then has been in different states, different countries.
It's funny. I had a friend in the Coast Guard. I would sometimes drive them down to their ship, which departed out of the, let's say, the home of the U.S. Pacific Surface Fleet or whatever. And you don't realize how big these ships are unless you're driving right next to them in a car. It's like, holy crap, these things are enormous.
Massive, yeah.
That was such a great show. I mean, it was just kind of cool.
I love working with those guys. Yeah, that was such a fun role and such a fun experience, being like, it was a locker room environment, and it was great.
I was about to say, it seems like there was a lot of testosterone on that set.
Yeah, I was a former football player, so I invited that a little bit. But we were shooting at the base, and we were all in our fatigues and everything, and I was lieutenant. So when you're walking to set, it was an active base, so people were stopping what they're doing to salute. You're like, no, we're just active. They couldn't tell the difference. I felt guilty. I'm like, you guys earned it. You guys are the heroes. We're just playing make-believe. But that was a different experience.
You segued out of that into, or were you doing that concurrently with Designated Survivor at the same time?
I got designated right after the first season I did with Last Ship, and then that took me to Toronto, and then I came back to kind of give my character an outro, you know what I mean? So we just, something where my character had, he just disappeared. So they wrote something in to say what happened to him.
Going into Designated Survivor, that was, again, that's kind of another one of those what if shows. And there it's kind of funny that it's sort of the same thing you did with Sam Elliott. You're kind of there to provide a little wisdom. It seems like a common theme that starts showing up. People look to you for a little bit of insight,
Yeah, I guess. Terminalist, I'm the opposite. But, well, not really. I a lot of insight in that too. But I guess that's what I project. I better Got to call my agent up and see what else, how we could expand on this.
Take over for that whole Morgan Freeman God thing. You know, it's like now it's not time to pass the baton, you know. Reed Diamond, just knocked it out of the park there as well. So it's cool that y'all, you know, connected. Y'all both, what I love about Reed, the same thing with you, is I have a great admiration for what I call just great working actors. They show up, no matter what they're doing, they knock it out of the park, you know. And I really, that's what I've always admired about what you do.
Thank you.
Now, moving, kind of hit rewind a little bit, when you were, football, you kind of closed that chapter, you're in L.A., what was that progression that got you in? Were you, you know, you're taking some classes, you're kind of doing the same, you know, getting your headshots, doing the auditions. How did that progress to, you know, was it pretty quick for you, or was it kind of a slow roll?
It was a slow burn. My roommate at the time, he needed a ride. His car broke down, and it was a commercial audition. It was a pretty big commercial. Joe Pitka directing, was for IBM. It was like 10 spots. And I didn't have an agent. I didn't have anything. I was working at FedEx at the time. I take him to this park, and I see a bunch of basketball players. And I'm like, I can do that. You think they would let me audition? He's like, yeah, give them a try, you know? And I got that job. And with that job, helped me to get in the class. It, you know, the money was good. That was the first job I ever had. It helped me get my SAG credentials and all that stuff. And I thought it was going to be easy. Like, why isn't everyone doing this? And then years, I didn't book any other commercials, but that's what that was. So, but I stayed in class. And then I started playing this sport called slam ball. And slam ball took me to different countries, different states. And ultimately, there was a One Tree Hill three-episode arc where James Lafferty and Joe Manganiello were the leads, and they were slam ball players. So they needed a real slam ball player to go against them in this three-episode arc. And I was telling the guys, like, hey, I've been in acting classes for years. I can do this. And I got the part, and that was my first real TV credit. And when I got back home from there, it was one of those things where I quit slam ball. I quit everything I was doing, just acting classes. And, like, that high I got from being on set.
How long had you done slam ball up to that time?
Like 6 years, 6, 7 years.
I know it was with trampolines, a little bit smaller ball, and you,
yeah,
it's basketball leveled up a little bit. But, you know, is it a big televised sport back in the day?
It was. It was on CBS. It was on TNT, TNN. They did some stuff on ESPN. We were in Italy. Right now, they're big in China. We were in Atlanta for Final Four. Like, we got around. And it was like, you know, watching a live video game. So it was still fun to me. And I still had that energy of, you know, wanting to play football. So that was like an outlet for me.
So really your athleticism is what got you indirectly in acting.
Yeah.
You know, that's
pretty much.
So there was a direct kind of a link there. So now you're on One Tree Hill. And were you just progressing on TV from there? Or were you, I guess, hey, everybody, you're auditioning for everything, I'm sure.
Yeah. One line here, two lines on Eastwick. You know, three lines on Hawthorne, just, you know, getting to know casting directors and really starting from the bottom, just figuring it out, having bad auditions, like, okay, that doesn't work. Let me try it this way. You know, meeting with different acting coaches, trying to figure out my voice, who I am as an actor, you know, what I bring to the table. And it just takes years to figure that kind of stuff out. And once you start putting it all together, you're like, I can do this. And that's, you know, it was gradual, but it happened.
Yeah, with age comes that confidence. Plus, you know yourself better, and you, it's a thing, that classic idea of if you knew then what you know now kind of a thing. It's like, if I could start over again, man, I'd be a lot more efficient, you know, with what I did or what I would be doing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Of course, you know, you managed to land, like, on multiple series where you multiple episodes, you know. You roll everything you've done up and go, okay, I've done this. What is something you'd like to put in the bucket list of what you would like to do, either actors you would like to work with, director, a kind of project that you would like to kind of scoot into, be it a movie or TV show?
My next goal is to lead something, to lead like an action project, whether it's television or film, like a Jason Bourne kind of thing, or like if we go back to comic books, like a Green Lantern, John Stewart kind of thing. But to be a lead and to carry the load, I've been, you know, the guy that I'm there, and I'm like you said, there's wisdom, and you have a strong presence, and you're there, and you're holding your own, but I haven't led that ship yet. And I think whether it's television or film, I love action, and I love sci-fi. So to be a lead in one of those genres, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Well, sci-fi, what were you growing up with? What was your go-to movies as a kid, 80s, 90s? What were you like all about back in the day?
The Return of the Jedi was the first film I went and saw without my parents at Tamperan Theater in San Francisco. I grew up Quantum Leap, The Greatest American Hero, Knight Rider. Like, 80s TV to me was the best TV ever, and that's why it's being remade. Yeah, 80s television to me was just, it was all there. Alf.
Oh, and what was it like being on Fantasy Island then? You know, you were on an episode of the new Fantasy Island. Was that kind of like...
That was a flashback.
Yeah, my daughter's into that show, and I was trying to tell her that back in the day, man, that was like Saturday night. Got Love Boat and Fantasy Island. That was the jam.
We didn't have a lot of options, and that was it. Like, this is what you're watching tonight.
They actually do kind of a cool spin on that show. Was it shooting Puerto Rico? Is that correct? Or...
Yeah. And that's what I was filming, actually, when I got the call that I got 1883. So I got the call when I was out on the beach in Puerto Rico, like rain coming down, I'm drinking a Mai Tai, and like, yeah, so as soon as you get back home, you have to be in Texas in 3 days. Like, wow, okay, yeah, let me get back home, let me pack. And I thought I was going to Texas just for, you know, cowboy camp, and I'd be flying back and forth for work. I didn't know when I got there, I wasn't going to come home again for 5 months. Like, I grossly underprepared.
You said cowboy camp? They put you all through kind of a schooling you up on how to be
cowboys, yeah.
What are some of the notes they hit on? Like how to ride a horse, I'm supposing?
Yeah, riding a horse. If you're nervous, the horse is nervous. Heels down. You got to look to see where you're going. Don't look at the horse's head. That's pretty common. Steering cattle, riding wagons, you know, just the whole, everything you can imagine. Like, we had to herd one group of cows from one side of the ranch to the other, and that was like 9-10 miles. We did it. Like, we figured it out, and it was all of us together, so it was a bonding process as well, and that's how we all came together, and we seemed so close when we started filming. We went right into filming from cowboy camp.
Well, you know, I got to ask, because I'm a native Texan, where was your favorite barbecue joint when you were in the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
We were kind of in a bubble because of COVID. So we kind of stayed on Taylor's Ranch.
Oh, true, true.
Yeah, but we had great barbecue at the ranch. We stayed at, it was the Steiner Ranch. The Steiners are one of the biggest steakhouses in the country. So we were getting the best meat you could imagine. That was the best, like, brisket I've ever had was on that ranch multiple nights. Yeah, we were taken care of.
I think that's putting you on the radar for some folks that maybe weren't introduced to you before.
Yeah.
Or maybe they knew about you just doing sci-fi. So maybe that lead, that thing you're looking for is definitely, it's out there. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, this introduced me to a whole new audience of people that weren't familiar with me before and just showed range from what I was doing before to, you know, being in the 1800s. Sam Elliott, you know, it's a character, you know, it's going to help my career.
And where are you pulling your inspiration from? I love that when I talk with actors and creatives, you know, where is the inspiration coming from? Is it music? Are you going to theater or just other movies and TV shows? Where do you kind of pull your inspiration from?
I do go to theater. I'm a member at Geffen over here in Westwood. They do some great, great shows over there. I love watching old movies. I still read a lot of comic books. I'm a comic book guy. I love the craft, and I love just older projects that I still watch. And I'm like that way with my music too, like 90s hip hop. I listen to a lot of 90s hip hop, and I still, when I'm working out, like, it's just, that gets me going.
90s hip hop, it was a different vibe back then. I know every generation says it, but 80s, 90s music, okay, I don't know anything now that people are going to go, 20 years from, like, oh yeah, that was the 2020s.
Yeah, no, it was 80s and 90s are special. Like, that's why all these remakes are happening from those two decades, whether it's film, whether they're remixing songs and bringing hooks from the back in the day. Like, it was game changing for everyone involved, and it's not just nostalgia. Like, it was some good television and film and music back in the 80s and 90s. Prince, you know, back there, like, come on. The artists from the 80s and the 90s, it's unreal.
It was kind of everything. You know, when you think about comedy, you had like Eddie Murphy doing stadium tours, it seems like, you know, all these, you know, so comedy was real big. You had these big personalities, everything was vibrant, and you got Prince and Purple Rain and all this stuff. It's like, it is different, and I try to appreciate what's now, and I'm leaning in because my 16-year-old's really into country music. She's the only one. She's a city girl, but she I think she loves the fact she's got Texas DNA, even though we're in New Orleans. So I'm paying more attention to country. You know, so I kicked on a little Tim McGraw for to, you know, educate her properly. but yeah, they'll play a song, and I'll hear a hook, and I'll hear a sample. I'm like, no, that's from...
That's Hall & Oates. Yeah, like,
yeah,
exactly.
Now, is your wife now, is she anywhere in the, is she in the industry, or is she just not even remotely even messing with it?
Not at all. She does real estate. She's a real good real estate agent out here in Southern California, and it works for us. I dated an actress before, and it wasn't my thing, but I have buddies that are married to actors and actresses, and it works for them. Either it works or it doesn't. It didn't work out for me.
Yeah, there's no in between. It either need say no more. Yeah, been there. Now, how you got little people bouncing? How many kids you got?
I have a 17-year-old that's about to graduate, and a two and a half year old that you probably hear in the background now. He's back there cutting up. But yeah, that's a gap.
I can kind of remember back those diaper days, those Disney Channel days. You know, you kind of reminisce. Yeah, now you got a little 2.0. You get to experience it again. But your 17-year-old, my son's about to graduate. Also, is the entertainment thing anywhere on the radar?
I don't know yet. She's still figuring it out. At the terminal list, we have our premiere coming up around mid June, and I'm going to bring her to that to see if that sparks anything, And then she came out to set, and we had one of our directors was Christina, and she was amazing, and they hit it off. So maybe she might want to be a director. I don't know. Like, you know, she's around it when I'm around it. So if she gets influenced by it, I don't think she really knows what she wants to do yet. But yeah, they got plenty of time to figure it out, but we'll see.
You know what I tell my kids? You don't have to decide what you want to do right now. Just find what you're passionate about, what turns you on, what things do you grab. That should inform what you end up doing. You know, not a fancy title on a business card, you know?
Right. What gets you out of bed in the morning. Absolutely.
So you got a built-in babysitter right there a little bit.
Little bit. She wants to babysit everybody else's kids but her little brother. Like, she'll take care of the whole neighborhood, and we'll pay her, but she still wants to, I don't know, it doesn't feel like she's babysitting if it's here on her couch. I don't get it.
Now, is she already kind of committed to a college? She already kind of made her choice?
She has a few different options. I don't know where she's going yet. She has prom this Saturday, so that's all we've been hearing about. So
that's gotta be blowing your mind a little bit, huh? Like, your baby's going to prom. I'm still getting my head around some stuff myself.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready for it, but you better be ready. Like, it's happening.
I tell you, I think you're lucky if you get kids with their head screwed on straight. But I'm like, I don't worry about my kids. I worry about other people's kids, know, influences or whatever have you. But you know, my daughter goes to school at Loyola, New Orleans, which is just 15 minutes from
amazing.
But of course she's in college. I got to pretend like she's cross country. I'm not going to be rolling up and bugging her at college. But it's just,
I might be that dude that just rolls up on college. Like, hey, what's happening? I don't know.
Yeah. Negotiate. I have that Life 360 thing on my phone. I'm like, you know, it's like, just in case I say, hey, anything sideways, not good, I will be there. Like, man, send up that bat signal. I'm there, man.
In a heartbeat. Absolutely.
But it is weird, and you kind of realize, okay, she's 19. I'm like, okay, I trust her. She makes great decisions, but it is kind of weird because, you know, we have that perspective that we remember them in diapers, you know. It's just a weird kind of, I feel like I'm going through daddy puberty or something. I don't know.
I'm with you. I'm, you know, the writing's on the wall. She's about, you know, she's leaving not too long from now, and that, like, the bird's flying the coop. You're used to that bird being in the coop for as long as you can remember, and it's just different.
Going back to 1883, last question on that is, you know, you had Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. I know they just had, I think all their kids are now off to college, or they got empty nests. Were you like picking the brain or anything? Or is there any discussion about, like, here's how you transition into a parent when your kids are somewhere else?
Yeah, they have three amazing daughters. Like, they did such a great job with them. And now that they're, you know, empty nesters, they're both going back on tour again. So they're busy, you know.
Really?
Yeah, they're both getting back at it. And Tim, even when we were shooting, you know, once every 3 or 4 weeks, he flies Saturday night down to somewhere to do a show, come back Sunday and be ready to work by Monday, which is an insane schedule. And I had zero energy during that whole shoot. For him to muster up energy to go do that and be back Monday morning at like 5 a.m. in the gym with me, was like, you're a superhero. Like, I... There's no way.
So working out is a big thing for him, I guess. Yeah. I guess that's how you maintain that energy, because on you can't tour at anywhere around this age and have that much energy without having a real solid workout program and taking care of yourself, you know.
Yeah, and the work schedule we had, we shot 6 days a week pretty much throughout. And these are long days, and you're outside. You're not in the studio with AC or heat when it's cold out. Like, you're weathering the storm and the elements. You're shooting in the rain. You're shooting in 10-degree weather. You're shooting in 115-degree weather with humidity in Texas. Like, we're doing it. So it's and then, you know, you're getting on a flight. You work all day on Saturday from being on set at 5 a.m. and flying to Fort Lauderdale to do a show. And you come back that night, and you're ready to go Monday morning. It's like, I don't know where he gets that energy.
I mean, I remember when he was king, and then you had Faith Hill, who was crossing over country and contemporary. I mean, you had the king and queen of country, basically. Yeah. You know, that's like a superpower.
One thing of advice, don't go behind them on karaoke night. You learn that fast. Karaoke night with, you know, the cast and crew, we're all singing. Don't go behind them. If you feel like you want to get up there and belt something out, make sure you do it early. Don't go behind Tim and Faith.
Well, you can say, okay, you're allowed to do karaoke with us, Tim, Faith, but you got to drink a lot first.
Yeah.
Okay, you have to make a little bit of a fool out of yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, that had to be just a great experience. I mean, and like I said, it's just really, it is an introduction to what else, what kind of special things you're capable of, man. That was a great, I mean, just, again, you knocked it out of the park. I mean, I was, you know, it was a great cast, but you always resonated. And certainly the Terminal List is going to be your next project that's coming out, which is July, you say, right?
Yeah, July 1st on Amazon.
And it's an Amazon Prime, correct?
Yeah. It's going to be a big one. Really good cast, great writing. Yeah.
And Chris Pratt, one last thing. I forgot he was in some Western, and I heard an interview. Somebody had said something about him that it was on a Western. He can bring out the gun and do, you know, he walks on set knowing exactly what he's doing.
No, he's a professional's professional. It was fun being opposite Chris. And it's just, he's so warm and giving as a person and as an actor. But it's the same qualities that Sam has to me. Like, he just brings the tension down all around you. Any anxiety that you might have from working with these, you know, level of actors, that it just creates a fun environment and you could produce magic in that environment. And when Chris is, you know, no matter what show you're on, the one on the show, the main person on that cast kind of dictates the energy of the rest of the cast and crew, the set. And
well, they put they put the whole show on their shoulders, more or less.
Yeah, they set the tone. And they set a great tone. So both those projects were really amazing to work on.
Now, I know when you get your next lead, man, you're going to be doing that. You're going to be doing that, and kind of you're going to be educating others on how it's done, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've had some good examples.
But before we get going, man, I appreciate your time, but I always got my 7 questions I like to kind of throw out. It's just a little fun, little insight, something I like to do. The first question, what is your favorite comfort food? That thing, if you see it on the craft food table, or maybe something you just need, it brings you right back home.
French fries.
Any particular brand, or just kind of any good French fries?
A good French fry. I think I'm a connoisseur of French fries, whether they're curly, shoestring, straight. You know, I love my, you know, man, no matter what diet I'm on, French fries have to be in that somehow. And we'll figure it out after that. But I'm a French fry guy.
Now, next question, if you could sit down, you're going to have coffee, spend a few hours talking story with 3 people, anybody, who would those 3 people be from your bucket list to sit down and have a conversation with?
All alive or dead or alive?
Either one.
Muhammad Ali, Tupac, and Muhammad Ali, Tupac, and Denzel Washington.
What's amazing is people forget how young he was when he passed. You know, he was only like, wasn't he early 20s? He was only no more than 25, wasn't he?
Yeah, 24, 25. And he had just so much wisdom and so much.
I was about to say, you still see quotes from him showing up.
Yeah.
Now, moving on to the next question is, who was your celebrity crush when you were growing up?
Jamie Lee Curtis, Vanity. And probably Kelly LeBrock.
Vanity. God, I haven't heard that name in forever. Yeah, and Kelly LeBrock.
I'm back to the movies I love. Yeah, Kelly LeBrock, Weird Science, Vanity, Jamie Lee Curtis, True Lies, Trading Places. Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was funny because you're a kid of the 80s also. You'll appreciate this. Total side note, but you mentioned Kelly LeBrock. And one of my syndicated shows was I focused on, you know, the genre of music we like, retro. And every week I'm talking to somebody, actors or singers and stuff. And indirectly, I'd gotten this connection and I had this little kind of back and forth texting thing or, you know, messaging back and forth with Tawny Kitaine. I was like, she's like, oh, I was going to have her on the show. And I know she passed not too long ago. And I sit there going, man, 14-year-old me is so proud of me right now. You know, is that white snake dancing on the car's hood. I'm like, man, it's like 14, 15-year-old me is like high-fiving me, you know.
Yeah, you're killing life right now. That 14-year-old's looking at you like, you're doing it.
Indeed, yeah. So now, if you were going to be going, let's say you're going to go find you and the wife, kids, you're going to be camped out on a beautiful island. A year, though, you're going to be gone, no streaming, no nothing. You can bring a DVD and you can bring a CD. Any album, and any movie, what would you be bringing? You only can choose one of each. What would you bring to that island for a year?
It would probably be the Off the Wall album from Michael Jackson, and a film. If I could only bring one film, it would be, for me, not the family. They wouldn't want to see it, but it probably would be Unforgiven. Clint Eastwood, Gene Hackman, Morgan Freeman. Yeah.
It's so funny. When this interview I'd heard with Sam Elliott, he said something. I think it was Mark Maron. He was on his show. He says, so has Clint Eastwood had you in one of his movies? He's like, no. He's like, come on, Clint. He's like, if you're going to cast somebody to be in your Western, yeah, I'm talking the Mount Rushmore. I mean, Sam Elliott's going to be on it, right? You know, it's about time the two of them got together.
Absolutely.
Now, if you were to define from the time you get up to the time you put your head on the pillow at night, the perfect day, what are the component parts of a perfect day for you?
Perfect day right now, after having a screaming toddler in my ear for the past 2.5 years, get up, pray, meditate, go hit the gym, straight from the gym, go straight to hot yoga, come back home, have some food, watch a little SportsCenter, do something for a few hours, maybe read, maybe watch some old films, and at night, if there's a big fight on, like a UFC fight or a big boxing match, me and my wife meet up with some of my buddies, go to a sports bar and just chill, unwind, and just watch a great fight. Like, that's it. Right now, that seems like a great day.
It does. A lot of that's introspective me time, I've noticed. Yeah. So, you know, you like to kind of... So I need to get more into that. I've not done the yoga thing, and I know getting up, you know, getting up there in age, but kind of that, you know, getting up in the morning, you feel like, you know, little aches here and there, and everybody's like, man, do yoga. You'll feel 10 times better,
it
man.
Is.
And I got to do that.
It's a game changer. And I, you know, growing up being by yourself a lot, I enjoy being in my own head, in my own space, and hearing myself think.
I'm a member of that tribe as well, my friend. So I know it well. Now, I got last two questions for you. Now, if you were not just knocking it out of the park, doing what you're doing now on camera, what other vocation could you go, I could do that, or I'd love to do that?
I think something just helping out, you know, youngsters, whether it's speaking at different high schools or just motivating or inspiring, or having a personal gym and helping people meet their goals, feel good about themselves. I know what the gym did to me when I was growing up. It gave me, you know, like self-confidence. So just being the you want to be, and the gym can help you get there. The gym, to me, it sets the tone for everything that I do. So I would probably have a gym somewhere and help other people see what I see.
Now you're coming back around to that thing I said before. Now you're making me go, God, I got to get back in the gym and work out. And I had a car accident a number of years, not really bad, but enough where I had to kind of really take a break.
Yeah.
And you know what? All gains get lost and you just kind of fall out of the routine. And it's like restarting again is always the task. It's so tough. You're inspiring me, man. Last question. If you could jump into a DeLorean, you're cruising back in time. You got a couple minutes with 16-year-old you. What is the advice and guidance that's going to get you on a better track or just make the road a little bit more smooth and enjoyable? What would that piece of advice be?
Keep your humility, lose the ego, and double your work ethic.
That's spot on, man. And I so appreciate it. Again, for you being generous with your time, I can't thank you enough, most certainly. And again, July, that's when we're going to be seeing you on the terminal list. Of course, you and Chris Pratt. LaMonica, thank you so much, again, for being generous with your time. And definitely looking forward to July, my friend, for the release of Terminal List.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate your time as well.
All right, that was cool. Really enjoyed this chat. I've admired LaMonica Garrett's work for a really long time, and I mean, just watching him in 1883, I mean, he just knocked it out of the park. And to have him on just kind of have that great vibe and just energy, man. It's no doubt that he's got the great career he's had so far and where he's going. And don't forget, the Terminal List, I believe it's July 1st, I believe, is the release date on Amazon Prime. And he'll be co-starring with Chris Pratt. He's a guy to keep your eye on. LaMonica Garrett, really, really enjoyed this chat. Really appreciate you being here. I mean, without a doubt, I do appreciate the messages I've received. And just check it in and let me know you like the show. Great conversations coming up. And glad to have you here. Don't forget to subscribe, like the show, leave a review if you will. Also, anything going on Story and Craft, just go to storyandcraftpod.com. That's how you shoot me a message if you want to check me out on social media. Anything, really. Just head to the website. It is all there. All right. That's it for this episode. Look forward to connecting with you on the next episode right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.